Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. On a Thursday, we are doing a late week edition of the Hey Mary Kay podcast. Mary Kay Cabot is with me. I'm Dan Lobby. Let's get to it here. These questions from our Football Insider subscribers, cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page. One bit of housekeeping as well. I always tell you about the Instagram account. Go search Orange and Brown Talk. Well, the bingo card is up on our Instagram account. I did that before we came on this podcast here. The bingo card is up, and there's a link there where you can actually generate your own version of the bingo card. So you can play along with us this offseason. Maybe I'll put a link here in the description of this podcast too, if you want to check that out. And if you missed that pod, go back a couple days and check out our offseason Browns bingo card, because we're going to start checking some of these off, Mary Kay, next week. Like, I don't know. We might come away with three or four things checked off just from next week alone, when we head out to the combine and we hear from Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski. But first, let's hear from our insider subscribers. Jim in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Mary Kay, if you had a special card that let you make one GM move for the Browns right now, which move would you do? And would you choose that move because you're worried Andrew Berry might not?
That's a really, really good question. That's a really good question. And it comes down to two things for me right now. I guess I am going to perhaps choose the one that I think they would get the most bang for their buck out of in 2024. So how do we want to do this, Dan? Should I say both of my things and then say the one that I'm going to actually choose?
Yeah. Why don't you put both of them out there?
Okay. So the two things that just come to my mind, number one, and I've said this many times before on this podcast, is re-sign Joe Flacco. Like, do that in a heartbeat. I think that's better than any other choice that you could possibly come up with for a backup quarterback. And I think, you know, there's a decent chance that he's going to play games, but there's also a decent chance that he's going to have other opportunities. But I would do everything I can to re-sign Joe Flacco. And that's not to say that Andrew will not do that, because I think they will try to do that. The thing that I would do is I would go out and I would break the bank for a Mike Evans or a T. Higgins or another big name, big game wide receiver. I think it's necessary. I think it's important. I don't necessarily think that they feel that way, but I certainly feel that way. I felt that way heading into last season. I thought they should have signed DeAndre Hopkins. So I think they need to go for it in the receiver department. Either make a trade or sign one of the receivers that might come available. Now, these guys might not hit the market. I mean, maybe Mike Evans hits the market. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. Does T. Higgins actually hit the market or does he not? I'm not sure. But I would do whatever I can to get one of these types of wide receivers or trade for one. You know, there are some names floating around out there of receivers that you could get in a trade. So, you know, I would do something like that. I would find a receiver that needs a change of scenery, a team that could use something, and either try to execute that trade or just go buy yourself a receiver. That's what I would do.
So let's stick with the receiver thing here. Because we've talked a little bit about like T. Higgins and, you know, Mike Evans is a little bit older, but still super talented. We saw what he did. I mean, all he does is put up 1,000-yard seasons. So, you know, I've been thinking through this, like, would the Browns go out and pay $20 to $25 million a year for a guy like T. Higgins? I don't know. That doesn't feel like something Andrew Berry would do, but I could also talk myself into it because you sign that contract and we know how these contracts are structured. It's not going to carry a big cap hit for a couple of years. I mean, like Dalvin Tomlinson doesn't have a big cap hit, I think, until next year off of his massive deal. So we know how they're going to structure this deal. So you could have Amari Cooper and T. Higgins, and you would redo Amari's deal anyway. You could have those two together, and they wouldn't eat up that much cap space collectively for the next year or two. And then when it's time to move on from Amari, you'd have a T. Higgins who's just entering the prime of his career, like the perfect guy to pay a ton of money to. His first big contract, you know, his second contract, his first big one, mid-20s. It makes sense. Like, I could absolutely talk myself into giving T. Higgins 4 years, you know, whatever it would be, $80 million, something like that. I think that would be a good investment. And I think the timing is lined up where once he gets expensive, you're probably moving on from Amari Cooper anyway.
Yes, absolutely. 100%. The return on investment would be so worth it to do something like this because you need another guy like this. If you want Deshaun Watson to be successful, yes, he's got Amari Cooper and he's got David Njoku as his primary pass catchers, but I think you need one more. What if Amari gets injured and he started to, you know, come up with a few little things here or there where, you know, he might have to miss some games. You know, he's not getting any younger and he sacrifices his body on every single play, of course. So I think you need to hedge your bets against some injury, but you just need more weapons. You need more weapons. You can't have too many. You want to strike fear into the hearts of defenses. And if you want to get over the top and into the Super Bowl, why not bring it on? This is the year to go for the gusto and add those one or two maybe expensive pieces that are going to get you there. If you don't get there and you didn't spend the money, what's the point? You know, what's the point? And I know I'm really good at spending Andrew Berry's money. I know I'm really good at it. I'm always go big or go home. But I really do believe that if you find the right player, like the 49ers did with Christian McCaffrey, I mean, like, just do it. Just do it. So that, you know, I would not hesitate to do that with T. Higgins. And you're right. He's at the right age. I don't think the money is too crazy. You know, I think you can find a way to pay him. I think you can restructure some contracts. I think you can do some things. So I think it would be well worth it.
And I also think, I don't know. To me, it's like if everything is designed to be about maximizing Deshaun Watson, right? Like, he's not going anywhere. You have to make it work for him. You have to, like, it has to work. There's no other choice here right now. It has to work with Deshaun Watson. Why wouldn't you give him every weapon imaginable? So, look, there might be some other names out there that aren't as expensive, that can be effective, that can be number two guys. So maybe it doesn't have to be $20 million a year to T. Higgins. But I wouldn't shy away from that if you had a chance to actually get that type of deal done. I wouldn't be scared of signing a player like that to a big contract.
No, I wouldn't either. I absolutely would not. And, you know, you might not have to go that high. You might be able to get so much bang for your buck out of a Gabe Davis. And we know that the Bills free agent receiver has a good working relationship with Ken Dorsey. Ken knows everything about him. They've been together, you know, for forever. And, you know, he's somebody that I think, you know, we should definitely be thinking about. And, you know, he's not going to cost as much money. So that might be another way to go. And now he caught 7 touchdown passes last year. I think that's exactly the kind of production that you're looking for. You need somebody that can score the football, that has a nose for the end zone, and that can catch touchdown passes for you and is a reliable and formidable receiver. And if you can get one a little cheaper than $20 million a year, then that's great. So, you know, I think you can also look in that more Gabe Davis category. You could look at Calvin Ridley, but I would find the best receiver that I can find at the best price that you can find him at, and I would go do that move. And I don't know if they feel the same way. I don't know. And I don't know if that we are going to walk away from the combine after having talked to Kevin Stefanski at the podium and in our sidebar interview and Andrew Berry at the podium in our sidebar interview and know any more than we know right now. I don't know if we're going to know that. What we will know by next week, perhaps, is has T. Higgins been franchised? And that changes the game. You know, which of these guys are off the market? We're going to have a much better idea. The tags have to be applied by March 5th. So we will know by then. Maybe we'll know by then if Mike Evans has re-upped, you know, with the Bucks or, you know, what they're doing with him. But, you know, it's a pivotal few weeks or pivotal month coming up.
Let's spend a little more time on that second part. Right? Well, it was the first thing you said, but let's spend more time on Joe Flacco as well. I'm bringing him back. When we talk about backup quarterback, I think there was certainly a time when the idea was, and this is part of why they drafted DTR, let's have a quarterback backing up Deshaun Watson who can do similar things to Deshaun Watson. I think with the way Joe Flacco came in, it kind of changed the way I view that a little bit. Like, maybe the backup quarterback doesn't have to be like that. Maybe it's best to just have a guy who, if he needs to get put in, he's a guy that Kevin Stefanski feels super comfortable calling plays for. And that, so like Jacoby Brissett, we saw it with him. Joe Flacco, we saw it with him. Like, Kevin had a lot of success with those guys because it was just, hey, let's rely on this scheme. And these guys will just do what they're supposed to do within this scheme. Whereas if you're asking a guy to do the things Deshaun does, a lot of guys can't do the things Deshaun does, at least not to the level that he can when he's at his best. So I'm really intrigued to see where they go with backup quarterback. I would fully endorse bringing Flacco back. I'd fully endorse bringing Jacoby back. I know you've talked about that. In my free agent list, I put Gardner Minshew on there as a potential backup option. Whatever they do, they've got to make the investment in that position. And it's probably going to cost somewhere between, depending who it is, it might run you $5 to $8 million a year or, you know, for on a 1 year deal. But I think you have to do it.
Yeah, they're willing to pay that, I think, to get this right. I think they recognize that they left themselves short in that category last year, that they need to have a good veteran, especially with Deshaun coming off of a shoulder surgery. Now, from every single thing that I've heard, he's either on schedule, maybe slightly ahead. I've written that he's going to start throwing in March on, you know, just at least a light tossing kind of basis. And the Browns fully expected him to come back 100% healthy in 2024. And for their sake and the sake of their fans and their players, I hope they're right. I absolutely hope for them and for their fans that they're right. But in the event that they're not, you've got to have a good backup plan. You've got to have it. You've got to have it. And you know what Joe is going to give you. Now, once again, we've addressed this with the front office. Do you have to worry about, you know, the fans being in love with Joe Flacco and calling for Joe Flacco and booing Deshaun at the stadium and things like that? You know, it could happen. That kind of thing could happen. But, you know, you would just have to find a way to get through all of that and, you know, and be really strong in your convictions that Deshaun Watson is the better quarterback and that you know that he's going to play well and win games for you. I think it's doable. I think you can make it work. Once again, providing that Deshaun does come back healthy and things go the way that you want them to. So I would go with Joe. Now, Joe, as I've written many times and we've talked about many times on the spot, is going to want that chance. He's going to want that chance to play some football. He showed last year that he still has plenty left in the tank. And I just did a podcast today with our sister site, Mass Live. And, you know, we talked about, you know, what if Alex Van Pelt comes calling? He's the offensive coordinator there now. You know, T.C. McCartney, who was here, obviously, with the Browns for the last 4 years, some with quarterbacks and some with tight ends, you know, was here last year when Joe Flacco did what he did. He's the quarterbacks coach for the New England Patriots now. So, you know, they just might have it in their minds. We know what Joe Flacco is all about. Everybody else might still think that he's just, you know, a 39-year-old dad that we plucked off the couch. But those guys know what he can do. Now, granted, you have to have an Amari Cooper catching the ball out there for you in order to look like Joe Flacco, or you might have to have a David Njoku out there. And they don't have that in New England right now. And they don't have the offensive line that the Browns did either. So they would have to support Joe way better than what they have on that roster right now. But, you know, there could be some opportunities for Joe Flacco to find either a temporary starting job or an opportunity to go in somewhere and compete for a starting job.
Okay, this is another receiver question, and it kind of has to do with the draft. And I think it's kind of a good piggyback off the do you have to pay a guy to be your number two? Because one of the reasons you have to consider it is because you either haven't been able to or you've missed to this point on certain draft picks that you've taken at receiver. Like, you know, the year they traded for Deshaun was a great receiver class in that first round. But of course, you had to give up that pick to get Deshaun Watson. So you're going to miss out on something when you give up all those picks. This comes from S.L. Smith in Texas. Hey, Mary Kay, will the Browns change or tweak their wide receiver evaluation process after so many swings and misses? Though he does say the verdict is still out, obviously, on Cedric Tillman and thinks he'll be good. But we have seen this even, you know, going back to when Andrew was here the first time around. They did struggle to draft receivers. And I don't know if it was because, I mean, they didn't really use, well, Corey Coleman was a pretty big miss. But other than that, they didn't use a lot of high picks on receivers. You know, David Bell's a third rounder, Cedric Tillman's a third rounder. I don't know. Do you think they have to change what they're looking at receiver? Or is it just a matter of maybe they haven't put the resources into drafting a bigger name at receiver yet?
Yeah, I mean, it is certainly way harder to find a starting caliber receiver in the third round than it is in the first round. I mean, if you're going to go out and you're going to get the best Alabama receiver or the best LSU receiver in the first round of the draft, you have a darn good chance of hitting on that, especially if it's the top half of the first round. So the chances are pretty great that that's going to work out for you pretty well. Once you get to the third round, they're not perfect. You know, these players are there for a reason. And, you know, some of it is experience, some of it is speed. It could be any number of reasons. But third round receivers, you know, it's going to be hard to nail that one every single time. That is why they have supplemented through free agency and trades. They recognize that without these first round picks and without these second round picks, it's hard to come up with a good receiver in the draft. And I think Cedric Tillman has the potential to be really good. But, you know, let's see how he comes along this year and the next year after that. So I don't know if it is the process as much as it is the lack of high draft picks and the lack of opportunities. Having said that, you know, it seems like some other teams are able to find those diamonds in the rough in those later rounds when it comes to receivers. Maybe you can think of a couple off the top of your head that maybe came out of the third round, Dan. I don't know if you have any examples in mind.
He was a later round guy, and it's always tough to like point to these guys and be like, man, they missed on him, because everybody missed on him. But like Nakua. It's Puka Nakua. Yeah, Puka. I always get him confused with his brother Kai, who was in Cleveland for a couple years. Yeah, Puka Nakua is one. I mean, there have certainly been other teams have found receivers in the third, fourth, fifth round who have been productive. So it's certainly not impossible.
That gives me an idea for a draft. We really should do a great names of players draft. I mean, that is, I love the name Puka Nakua. Don't you even love saying it?
Oh, it's great. It's a great name.
That's a great name.
And that he's paired with, you got Puka Nakua and he's paired with Cooper Kupp. It's like, it's perfect. It's just the perfect pairing.
Do you think, this is either a draft that we actually do on a pod, or this is one of those, you know, we can pull back the curtain a little bit. We sometimes do some reporter drafts where we just kind of talk amongst ourselves, shall we say, you know, when we're sitting around having a beer somewhere.
We might want to save it for the Greenbrier. might be one of those.
That could be one of those. I think you're right. You know, I think the receiver eval, I think the jury is still out. If they started drafting LSU receivers in the first round and they're missing on those, then there's a problem. or any other SEC, you know, SEC receivers in the first round and you're just not getting that right, then, you know, maybe that's something to discuss. But they haven't used draft picks, high draft picks on receivers. And they've made some decent trades. Now, I think, of course, Amari is the best example. He's amazing. And I think the jury is still out on what Elijah Moore is going to be able to accomplish for this football team, because he was drafted in part for the match in skill set with Deshaun Watson. Twitchy, fast, versatile, and all of those kinds of things. So, you know, I just think that, you know, this could be a better year for him once he gets his mojo down with Deshaun Watson. So let's see how this year goes for him. I think it'll be better. And I think the first part of the year, they didn't really quite know what his role was going to be. He didn't know what his role was going to be. He was open to anything. And he willingly did anything they asked him to do. But they might have spread him a little bit thin. And I think once they hone in on what he does best, the routes he excels at, and the formations he's best in, then I think they're going to get the most out of Elijah Moore. So still willing to give him the benefit of the doubt of really having a nice season coming up. But I think they should be able to, once again, this year we know they don't have a first round pick. Their first pick is in the second round. And then they have a third and they don't have a fourth. So I think they're going to have to look again to free agency and trades for a receiver. And I think it's a pretty good year for receivers in free agency if a number of these guys hit the market. I mean, one that I'm intrigued by is Marquise Brown. Speedy, fast, right? Was well coached in with the Cardinals. So, you know, he's somebody that I would be looking at, as well as I mentioned before, Gabe Davis. You've got Michael Pittman of the Colts, right? I mean, there are some guys. Calvin Ridley. They've been interested in Calvin Ridley in the past. Calvin comes with, you know, a little bit of baggage, but he's a former first round pick and he could be dynamite with Deshaun. He could possibly be dynamite with Deshaun. So, you know, there's stuff out there available. I just don't think it's going to come necessarily in the draft this year. It could, but I don't think everybody should put their hopes and dreams on a second round receiver.
Yeah. And when I think about the guys they've drafted, it does feel like they've tried everything. You know, mm-hmm. They drafted a super fast raw player in Anthony Schwartz, right? And then they draft a guy who just caught a bunch of footballs in David Bell. And Cedric Tillman is kind of a, hey, here's a big body. They've tried, it feels like they've tried everything, but it is just a lot harder when you can't sit in the top 10 and pick whatever, like you said, LSU, Ohio State. I mean, look, if you could just pick the top Ohio State receiver every year, that would be great. But, you know, you haven't been in play for any of those guys. So it's just harder to do. And they just haven't been able to quite find that guy. But that is one of those areas. And this is the way it is with front offices. The Browns are really good at drafting secondary players. And mm-hmm. There's other areas, too, that I think they're good at drafting at. Receiver seems to be a struggle right now. So maybe they'll figure it out. Maybe they won't. But if they do need to find a way to supplement that position, because they just haven't been able to find those guys.
Yeah. And even if we haven't even mentioned David Bell. David Bell has come along and, you know, I think he'll continue to develop. But once again, we're talking about, you know, later round picks. We're not talking about first round, second round picks. And we know the statistics of the success rate for third round and beyond. It's not super high. But even if you do go out and sign, let's just say Gabe Davis, because I feel like he is affordable and somewhat realistic. And you've got the obvious intel, and he would probably want to come here and work with Ken Dorsey again. That certainly doesn't preclude you from drafting a receiver in the second round at all. And that is where you would test your mettle in terms of your receiver eval. Because if you can get that right in the second round with the number 54 overall pick, when the obvious ones are off the board by then And then you have to show what you're all about in terms of being able to effectively evaluate and draft receivers. That's where you can make your mark. You can do it right there at number 54. I think the draft is probably deep enough in receiver that you could still get a starting caliber one right there. And certainly going out and buying one or trading for one would not preclude you from drafting one.
Okay, quick break. Then we're going to get to some more Hey Mary Kay questions on the second half of our podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm back on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast on a Thursday, a late week Hey Mary Kay edition of the podcast. I'm going to tell you all the places you should follow us here before we get going. Again, I mentioned Instagram off the top. That's Orange and Brown Talk. YouTube, Cleveland Browns on Cleveland.com. And of course, you can become a Football Insider subscriber. Go to Cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page for that. And, you know, of course, just make sure you're subscribed to this podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, so it just drops right on your phone as soon as I hit publish. Okay. This comes from John Brevard in North Carolina. Hey, Mary Kay, we still haven't seen an extension for Andrew Berry or Kevin Stefanski. Why do you think that is?
You know what? It could be in part just a timing thing. I came to find out that the coaches are kind of out of the building this week while they're reconnecting with their families, catching their breath before they head to the combine. Once I heard that, I was like, okay. Dummy, this would have been the week for me to go to Florida, not March 2nd through 9th. That is probably not going to go all that well, Dan. But anyways, I'm calling it the storm before the storm. You know, that's the week in which they traded for Deshaun Watson and all the stuff happened with Baker Mayfield. And I don't anticipate like big, crazy things like that happening this year, but anything can happen. Anything can happen. And that is a very busy week in the NFL. And I will be on the beach with a fruity drink and a straw.
I still think that's a pretty good deal. There might be craziness going on, but at least you can worry about it while you're on the beach.
That's true. Hopefully I will have some Wi-Fi wherever I am. But anyways, so I forgot my train of thought. I had my toes in the sand. Where was I going with that?
The coaches are off this week, essentially.
Yes.
Before they kind of gear back up starting next week.
The coaches are off this week. I think it's a slower week for the front office members as well. I think everyone's just kind of catching their breath before we all head to Indy and the craziness and the madness ensues. And it's going to get really, really interesting. I mean, there are a lot of decisions to be made. And I think the Browns have a lot of things that they have to deal with, including, you know, the one that I wrote about today, you know, the whole Nick Chubb issue. You know, what do they do about Nick? You know, and we talked about this yesterday in our podcast, but, you know, these are some of the things that you're going to start to hear coming about as soon as next week.
Okay. So, I mean, look, the extensions are coming. We know that. They're going to extend these guys. It's just a matter of timing than anything.
That's where I was going. It's a down week. So the coaches are out of the building. And I think to a certain extent, the personnel staff is regrouping to go to the combine. And they just got done with all their draft meetings and everything. I think it's a matter of timing. They had to get through the Super Bowl. They had to go there and accept their four awards and get through that whole thing and then come back and then get the draft meetings underway, get ready for the combine, and then, you know, then get through free agency. So maybe it comes after some of this craziness that is about to pick up next week. You know, maybe it comes, you know, in that period between the first week and a half of free agency when most things get done and when everybody heads to the owners meetings at the end of March in Orlando. So there's a little pocket of time in there. Maybe it'll happen then.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of how the NFL offseason goes. It sort of gets crazy for a few weeks and then it dies back down, you know, and then we're back for the offseason program and there's waves of free agency. Of course, there's the draft, but it kind of ebbs and flows. So they'll find some spot to do this. Maybe they do it before the season. I don't know. They'll find a spot. They'll find a time. I don't think people need to worry about the fact that these things haven't gotten done yet. Let's go back to Deshaun Watson. This question comes from Megan in Akron. Hey, Mary Kay, will the team have different expectations for Deshaun because of Joe Flacco's success? I would think rust can't be an excuse anymore. And even if it could be an excuse, I'd have to imagine it would be a lot smaller of an excuse based on what we saw from Joe Flacco coming off the couch and just racking up 300-yard games.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very interesting because Joe did step right in and assimilate into this offense so very, very quickly. And when Deshaun steps in, he's going to be coming off of really – 3 seasons out of football. Joe wasn't out of football for 3 seasons. Joe was on the couch for 10 weeks. I mean, he played football last year. He started the season finale for the Jets. He started games early on for the Jets, and he was in the flow of football for all those years. Deshaun hasn't been in the actual uninterrupted flow of football since 2020. So he's got to deal with that. And then they're basically reconstructing the offense and, you know, bringing in ideas from Ken Dorsey and Tommy Reese and everybody else. So it's going to be new for everyone. I think there's going to be a new vibe, a new philosophy, and everybody's going to be learning it as they go along. I don't think they're going to change up the terminology too much, so they should be able to pick things up pretty quickly. But once again, there's going to be a learning curve. There's going to be a learning curve, and they have to come up the learning curve very, very quickly. So let's see how it all goes. And when I did write about Nick Chubb, you know, if he's going to be their workhorse running back, he's not even going to really probably be able to be in the mix very much until at some point during training camp. There's no guarantee he's going to be ready for the start of the season. That's the goal, and that's the hope, but that's not guaranteed. So even that, you're going to be working through, you know, how are we game planning, you know, for Nick, no Nick. So there's going to be a lot to figure out. And they might be figuring it out while they're on their way to Brazil. And, right? And while they're on their way to wherever else they're going in week 2, because Billy Joel and Rod Stewart are going to be playing at the stadium on September 13th. So you cannot be home on September that weekend. I mean, I suppose you could have a Monday night game that week, but even that might not be enough time.
Yeah, I can't even think about that. I guess, I've already sent us to Jacksonville for a week, so whatever. Problem
right.
Solved, I guess. There's going to be issues, there's going to be rust, but I do think this does just sort of go back like to what you said. If Joe Flacco's your backup, and there is, I just don't think there's going to be much of an appetite from fans to hear about rust or to hear about, well, this is going to take time. Now, that might be the reality. That doesn't mean that that's wrong. I just don't think there's going to be much patience from this fan base to have to hear that. And that's where Kevin, and I think Kevin can handle it. That's where Kevin and his coaching staff just have to sort of have tunnel vision and not worry about any of the outside noise, not worry about, you know, if Deshaun Watson is getting booed. I mean, maybe it's a good thing that those first 2 games could be on the road. You know, it'll give you time to work some of that stuff out. And then by the time you get home for week 3, you know, you should maybe start to be able to get moving a little bit. So that, I mean, that might actually work in the Browns' favor in that regard.
It could. But when we talk about this notion of patience and riding it out and weathering the storm, you know, that could be a tough way to start your season. I mean, the Philadelphia Eagles are going to be really trying hard to get back on track. That's a good football team. And you know that they're going to do everything that they can to be ready to roll for their opener. So it's not like you're opening up against a team that went 11-6 last season. And they've got Jalen Hurts. They've got a good defense. They've got a lot of good players. Not like you're opening up against a 2-15 team or whatever. You're opening up against a really good team. And then we don't know what would happen in week 2. But patience flies out the window, as we all know, in the NFL, if all of a sudden you're 2-3, right? If you're 2-3, people start to panic. People start to panic. And you do, to a certain extent, have got to just chill and let it happen, because we know the Buffalo Bills got off to a horrible start this year. The Kansas City Chiefs got off to a horrible start this year, to the point where we were all really, really wondering about how good those teams were anymore. I mean, it was the conversation and the narrative around that was pretty bizarre. So there's not a whole lot of time for patience in the NFL, because the margins are so thin between success and failure. It's one game in many cases. In many cases, it's one victory or loss that is going to make or break you. So, you know, you really can't afford to just kind of work your way into it. They have to hit the ground running to the extent they can.
Yeah. And see, now I'm doing it. I had a point I wanted to make and I completely forgot what it was going to be.
Oh,
we are in the heart of the off season at this point.
Yes.
We can't even remember what we're going to say. It probably wasn't that important, I suppose. Okay. Let's get to this one from Paxton Stiles in Cheverly, Maryland. This one has to do with David Njoku. And by the way, this hit my Twitter feed, X feed, whatever we're calling it. I'm still a Twitter holdout. I guess PFF did like some show where they were going through potential cap casualties or something, and they randomly threw out David Njoku's name. And this just goes to what we were talking about on Wednesday about, like, don't get too caught up in some of this stuff. Like, I don't understand how anybody could say that about David Njoku. There's just no way. It doesn't make sense. So anyway, I want to ask a David Njoku question. Hey, Mary Kay, after the LA game, David Njoku played a huge part in the Browns' success. Why do you think it took Joe Flacco to make that happen? And do you think Deshaun Watson will do the same now that everyone sees what high caliber David Njoku looks like?
Okay. This is a really good question. It is. It's a great question. And I do have some theories about this. First of all, I think that Dave Njoku, I don't think he adjusted particularly well to all the different quarterbacks. Okay. I think it was pretty obvious that he started having trouble like catching passes from like Dorian Thompson Robinson. Like he really struggled with that for a while. And he was having trouble catching some Deshaun passes too in the early going. There were a few games there where he just was uncharacteristically again dropping the ball because he seemed to have gotten past that. But he, you know, he felt he got set back that way a little bit this year. And we saw and heard that, hey, here I am at whatever, 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm on the jugs machine and he's FaceTiming Kevin Stefanski because, you know, he knew that, you know, he needed to turn himself around. So there was that. He was struggling. And then he had the accident where he burned his face in the fire pit accident. And that was a life-changing, career-changing turnaround for David. He came back to the game with a renewed vigor for life and with a renewed commitment to excelling at his craft. And he got better after that. So I think he got himself turned around. And then I think it was the perfect storm because then at the same time, Joe Flacco comes in and all of a sudden he throws this extremely catchable ball. I wrote a whole story about it, that was his superpower, the catchable ball that Joe throws. It's exactly what these guys needed after trying to figure out this guy's passes and that guy's passes and this guy's passes. Joe's was like catching a Nerf ball or a marshmallow. I mean, it could be 50 yards downfield and it wasn't coming in like a wrecking ball like it does with some people. It was coming in nicely. They could just put their hands out and the ball floats in. And you saw a lot of guys really excel with Joe from that standpoint, including Amari, who addressed this issue. You know, they just all had an easier time of it at that point. And so I think David benefited greatly from that. But I think he's going to be okay with Deshaun in that regard too. I think Deshaun has immense arm talent and I think he throws a really nice ball and he can adjust his, you know, the ball speed and he can do all those kinds of things as well. So I think he'll be okay as long as he has the continuity of it being Deshaun over a period of games.
Yeah. And I think Deshaun can be hard to adjust to because he just plays the position. I mean, Joe Flacco is going to drop back, go through his reads and throw the ball to the right person every time. Right now, obviously, we did see Joe create with his legs. It's not like he was a statue back there, which also was another surprising Joe Flacco development in the last month of the year. But, you know, Deshaun is going to move around and he's going to run and he's going to scramble. And it's just a different way to have to play receiver or tight end. You have to really excel in those scramble drills. You mentioned Elijah Moore. We saw it in the Baltimore game. You know, him and Deshaun connected on a scramble drill for a touchdown during that comeback. So, you know, that's an area where David probably just needs to get comfortable and, you know, maybe he'll spend the offseason watching some Kelsey film and some Mark Andrews film and, you know, whatever else, kind of watching what those guys do really well in those situations. And, you know, some of it'll just come down to time on task. So, yeah, I think David will continue to develop beyond what we've seen so far, for sure.
Yeah, you make such a great point there, Dan, because that is so true. There's such a big difference between throwing it to a spot, which Joe got really good at that. And again, it wasn't always that, because he did excel so much in the keeper game that he was out on the run and doing some different things. But he got really, really good at throwing to a spot when he was, I think, even better than when he left the game before his 10 weeks off, because he was just throwing it to his dad at a spot over and over and over and over and over again and repping it. And so I think David flourished in that kind of an environment where, you know, if you're in this spot, I'm going to get you the ball. But that's not the Deshaun game. That is not the Deshaun game. And you have to make sure that you have a natural feel and natural ability to move and to understand the game almost in a basketball kind of sense of moving and getting open, right? And that is what David's going to have to, like you said, maybe you watch a little bit more film. Think of the absolute connection, the synergy, the mind connection that Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce have. I mean, he just knows where Patrick needs him to be on any given play. And Patrick doesn't need him to be in a spot. He just needs to find him. Like, you go do what you got to do, and I'll do what I got to do, and I'll find you with that ball. And they just make beautiful music together. And that's what Deshaun and Dave Njoku are going to have to get to, that point where on those off-schedule plays and when he's throwing on the run and improvising, that he's got those guys that just have a feel for it, a natural vision for what happens when everybody's on the run.
Okay, there we go. Our Hey Mary Kay edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. We're going to come back and get you ready for the combine. Mary Kay and I are going to talk to Lance Reisland. He's been digging into draft prospects for the Browns. So he's going to enlighten us and enlighten all of you about some names to keep an eye on in Indianapolis. Of course, we will be out there next week. We'll have pods coming your way all next week from Indianapolis as well. One last time, on Instagram, find us on Orange and Brown Talk. Find us on YouTube. Search Cleveland Browns on Cleveland.com. And, of course, these questions came from Football Insider subscribers. Cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page to get info and get signed up for that. And become one of our texters as well, on top of getting access to those stories that you need to be a subscriber to read. Mary Kay, I'll talk to you later.
Sounds great.